Well, you may be asked the question, who is Gary Snyder? Why is Steve doing a sermon about him? And what's Dick doing over here? Well, the answers to the first and the last of those three questions will become, I hope, apparent as the service goes along. As to the why, another of those traditions I've created for myself over the years here is to do one sermon per year on one of the Beat Generation poets and writers. Some of you may know it was about 5-6 years ago now I devoted a substantial portion of a sabbatical I took then to writing a book about him, and so I bring one of them out each year. I think so far I've done Jack Kerouac, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, William Burroughs, Allen Ginsberg, and today we're doing Gary Snyder, another part of that genre. I met Gary Snyder on only one occasion many, many years ago. I was a campus minister at the Stevens Point campus of the University of Wisconsin. This was back in my pre-UU days. And as I was walking through the student union one day, I saw his name put up on a poster saying he'd be on campus the next evening reading from a collection of poetry. You've already heard a couple of poems from it, a collection of his poetry which was called Turtle Island, and for which he had been awarded a Pulitzer Prize for poetry. I knew very little of Mr. Snyder's poems then. I mainly connected him up with being the prototype for a character named Jaffe Ryder in Jack Kerouac's novel, The Dharma Bums. This is the book, the novel Kerouac wrote following his encounter with the Buddhism and the San Francisco poetry and literary renaissance of the mid-1950s. So I went to the evening not quite knowing what to expect from a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet. What I got, and the others who came to hear him, what we got was a somewhat short, rather unassuming guy who smiled a lot. He wore jeans and a flannel shirt. His long hair was pulled back in a ponytail. He had a not quite full beard, and he had a stud earring on one of his earlobes. Now, this was 1975. You know, guys weren't doing earrings in 1975, but he was. You want a better look at what Gary looked like, just look at Dick's t-shirt when the service is done today. I liked listening to him. I enjoyed hearing his earth-based Native American spirituality, which came through in much of his poetry. He may have read the one we heard, Prayer for the Great Family, that evening. I'm not sure. It is in the Turtle Island collection. At a reception that followed, I got into a conversation with him discussing how Kerouac used him as a character in one of his novels and how Kerouac tried to hold his Catholicism and his Buddhism in some kind of a balance. And his Stevens Point host saw the two of us talking and invited me to join Gary and him and a few others at a home in the area for some further conversation that evening. It turned out to be a really wonderful night. Even though I don't remember much of the conversation, I came away thinking that Gary Snyder was about as comfortable in his own skin as anybody I think I had ever met. He seemed to have a way of being fully at home and fully engaged with his life and with those around him, wherever he happened to be. Many, many years later, as I already referred to, this was about 5-6 years ago, I reconnected with him by email when I was writing that Beat Face of God book and devoted a part of it to him. He actually remembered, at least he said he remembered, being in Stevens Point on that evening many years ago. I don't think he could specifically identify me, and I didn't really expect that. Gary Snyder turns 80 this year. He lives in a home on a homestead, off the grid, as the saying goes, in a place he built for himself, which he's named, I hope I can come close to pronouncing this correctly, Kit Kadizzi, in a rural area east of Sacramento. So with Dick's help this morning, I'm going to share some of his life and work. Dick has been a longtime admirer of Gary's poetry. I knew I couldn't do a tribute to Gary Snyder without including Dick in the service, so I thank him for that. Well, Gary knew he may have been ahead of the game or ahead of his time with that stud earring of his, but he was ahead of his time in a lot of other ways as well. He knew about the interdependent web of life decades before that language ever found its way into our UU purposes and principles. He was practicing an earth-based spirituality long before we identified it as one of the sources of our liberal religious faith. He was, as I say, green before green was cool. He was also a serious practitioner of Zen Buddhism, at a time when mainstream America still regarded anything other than Christianity or Judaism as something of a heathen religion. He was equally at home in the world of academia, as he was with loggers and trail makers. He could testify before legislative bodies with the same ease as he could backpack through the high Sierras. What I like most about him is he could take himself and his causes very seriously while also having a good laugh at himself and his efforts all at the same time. Gary Snyder grew up in rural Washington State. He climbed up Mount St. Helens when he was 15 years old. He worked on logging crews, worked on road gangs. He spent a couple of summers as a fire lookout for the U.S. Forestry Service in the Northern Cascades. He had a very outdoorsy, kind of rough and tumble life. His poem about riding on a logging truck captures well this aspect of his life. Dick's going to read it. It's called Why Log Truck Drivers Rise Earlier Than Students of Zen.
In the high seat, before dawn dark, polished hubs gleam, and the shiny diesel stack warms and flutters. Up the Tyler Road grade to the logging on Poor Man Creek, 30 miles of dust, there is no other life.
Thank you. Snyder went to a college called Reed College in Portland, Oregon. It was there that he developed his interest in Zen Buddhism and began finding his poetic voice as well. This interest eventually brought him to the University of California at Berkeley in the mid-1950s, where he continued his Buddhist studies and kept writing his poetry. This was when he met Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Michael McClure, Philip Whalen, and various other poets and writers who made up the West Coast Bay Area beat scene at that time. But Snyder, he didn't stay with that scene for very long, because in the 12 years between 1956 and 1968, he spent much of his time at a Buddhist monastery in Kyoto, Japan. He has two poems Dick's going to read that show the Buddhist influence on his life and work. One is called For Example, and rather than butcher the pronunciation of the other one, I think Dick's got a better handle on that. I'm going to let you go first.
Well, I'm afraid my Japanese is about as good as yours. I think it's called Higashi Hongwanji, written at Shinshu Temple in Kyoto. In a quiet, dusty corner on the north porch, some farmers eating lunch on the steps, up high behind a beam, a small carved wood panel of leaves, twisting tree trunk, ivy, and a sleek, fine-haired doe. A six-point buck in front, head crooked back, watching her. The great tile roof sweeps up and floats, a gray shale mountain over the town. And this is called For Example. There was an old Dutch lady lived in a room in my house in front of the small shack. She sat all day in the garden by my door. She said she knew the East and once had seen a book on Buddhist monks. And you've got no business going to Japan. The thing to be is life, is young and travel much and love. I know the way you are, you study hard, but you have friends that come and stay and bite. And there's the little tree you planted by the wall as I filled my water bucket. The sun lit up her thin white hair. A bird squawked from the avocado at the air. And bodhisattvas teach us everywhere.
Thanks, Dickie. And both those poems came from his time in Kyoto. And I believe the second one refers to when he was living in Berkeley and had himself a little shack of a cottage behind the main house out closer to the road. He was one of those people who could see a poem, see a lesson, see a bodhisattva, as he calls it, in just about everyone he met or encountered. Well, Gary Snyder returned to the United States on a more or less ongoing basis in 1969. From then on, his life did revolve around that of a poet, an academic, a scholar of Native American spirituality, and an environmental activist. As already noted, he became a Pulitzer Prize winner in 1972. He took the name for his winning collection of poems, Turtle Island, from some of the creation myths of the original inhabitants of this continent, for whom the term Turtle Island refers to what we call North America. As I said, he was comfortable all over the place. He did become an academic for a time. He came onto the faculty in the English department at the University of California at Davis. I kind of wonder about that, having done a little bit of teaching myself, you know, how he dealt with, you know, class lists and grades and stuff like that, but I guess he managed. He was on that faculty for a while. I think it would have been a real treat to have been one of his students. And through it all, he was able to maintain a perspective that I strive for myself, which is to devote oneself very seriously to the causes that you believe in, while also being aware that so much of what happens on this earth is beyond our hands. And this attitude, this idea, comes through one of his poems that I find myself coming back to from time to time. The poem is called It Pleases. In it, Gary writes about coming out of the United States Capitol building in Washington, D.C., after testifying on behalf of some environmental legislation and what he sees from there. So Dick will read It Pleases. Does what it pleases. I don't see resignation. I don't see despair in that statement or in that poem. It's one, as I say, I come back to from time to time, because as I see it, it's really a matter of being able to tell yourself that you have given your best energies to something you feel deeply about, while also being able to look up and know that the earth and time and history will also take their courses, and you've done your best to shape them. I'm reminded of a line by the Reverend Richard Gilbert, a retired UU minister who spoke on one of our services here 3 or 4 years ago now. Dick Gilbert was a very strong social activist. He wrote a book called The Prophetic Imperative. It's a very good guide to social justice work from a liberal religious base. And I don't think it was in that book, but somewhere Richard also wrote, "I awake in the morning torn between a desire to save the world and to savor it." This makes it difficult to plan my day. What I really admire about Gary Snyder is his desire and his ability to both work at saving the earth while also being able at a very deep level to savor it. For after all, if you can't savor the earth, but why would you devote your energies to trying to save it in any way? Gary's savoring the earth comes through very well in another of his poems, which I'm going to have Dick read now. And Dick, I'm going to let you pronounce this, the title for that one, because I know I won't quite get it right. You do know how to do this.
This is one of my favorite poems by Gary Snyder, and one reason I really like him is because he paints, literally paints pictures with words. Called Paiute Creek. One granite ridge, a tree would be enough, or even a rock, a small creek, a bark shred in a pool. Hill beyond hill, folded and twisted, tough trees crammed in thin stone fractures. A huge moon on it all is too much. The mind wanders. A million summers, night air still, and the rocks warm. Sky over endless mountains. All the junk that goes with being human drops away. Hard rock wavers seems to fail this bubble of a heart. Words and books like a small creek off a high ledge gone in the dry air. A clear, attentive mind has no meaning, but that which sees is truly seen. No one loves rock, yet we are here. Night chills. A flick in the moonlight slips into juniper shadow. Back there, unseen, cold, proud eyes of cougar or coyote watch me rise and go.
Thanks again, Ben. I guess when you've lived as long as Snyder has, when you've been all the places he's been, done all that he's done, there's bound to be a lot of stories come up about you. We're going to do just one this morning. Several years ago, much of Gary's poetry was compiled into a large volume called The Gary Snyder Reader. In putting it together, the editor, Jim Dodge, visited Kitkadizzy, Gary's present home. He happened to get there at the same time that Snyder was hosting some students from Goddard College. There's an interesting story about how that meal went. I'm going to have Dick read it. Dick, why don't you come to the podium here to read that one? It's more of a prose piece.
I offer as proof my first visit to Kitkadizzy, the Snyder home in the Sierra foothills, just after its construction in the early 70s. As I recall, a group of Goddard students was there, along with our contingent, and we ate a simple meal of roadkill venison stew, seated cross-legged on the floor, Japanese style, at a long table. We finished our meal by swabbing our wooden bowls clean with a dill pickle, then eating the pickle. People rinsed and stacked their bowls, then repaired to the living room for some conversation. The whole meal and cleanup struck me as oddly formal in its efficiency and dispatch, and I was thinking maybe Gary had gone over to Asian ways, that I had been misguided by his Northwest vernacular. When Gary emerged from the pantry with a large cardboard box and gleefully announced, "Dessert is served," and began handing out packages of Hostess Ding Dongs. The ultimate confirmation of Western roots. And a clear testament that he understood that purity was the end of possibility.
Oh, I love that story. That's another thing I try to bear in mind. Purity is the end of possibility. That's a wonderful story, a ritualistic kind of a meal done in an almost primitive fashion, done in something of a pre-modern setting, I guess you could call it. And then the host, Mr. Snyder, slips out of his old man of the earth mode long enough to pass out Hostess Ding Dongs. It probably was, as Jim Dodge noted, a Snyder still being true in some ways to his Western roots for all of his exposure to Eastern ways. I also think it may have been a way of him saying to his guests, "Yes, you know, pay attention to what I'm doing. Pay attention to what I'm trying to teach you about living your lives and living with the ways of the earth," but then also pausing long enough or doing a little action to say, "But please, really, don't take me too seriously. Well, I don't live the way that Gary Snyder does, but in my own kind of a way, doing the things I do, I try, I hope, I can convey the same kind of message. I believe the things that I say and do, in large part, are of value, are of importance. I wouldn't be saying them, I wouldn't be doing them otherwise. But at the same time, I don't want to be taken too seriously too often. Every now and then, I like to throw out a little junk food just for fun, and also remind myself again that purity is the end of possibilities." What he's saying is don't get so locked in to your values, however important they are. Don't get locked into your way of life, however important and necessary it is. that you can't see other ways of thinking and living, and just have a little fun with it as well. Toward the end of his life, Charles Darwin reflected, "If I had my life to live over again, I would make it a rule to read some poetry and listen to some music at least once every week." As we know, it was Charles Darwin's work and his discoveries that profoundly demonstrated the interconnectedness of all of life. Not only the interconnectedness of the animal species, including, of course, we human beings, but our relationship with and our interdependence upon all living things, present and past. I think it was Darwin's studies, as much as anything, that opened the door for that kind of understanding. But what I think, drawing upon these words of his, what I think Darwin also came to realize, as that quote indicates, that to truly understand and to truly celebrate this great relationship that we are in, I say great relationship with a capital G and a capital R, to truly understand and truly celebrate this great relationship in which we all participate, we need poetry. We need poetry as much as we need data. For indeed, the two need each other. So along with his environmental activism, Gary Snyder has given us the poetry that we human beings need in order to better appreciate and better value our place in this interconnected web of life. And for this, he does indeed deserve our gratitude. I think Gary Snyder would agree with me that he probably would not have made a very good shaker for all kinds of reasons, even though they also tried to live close to the earth. I probably wouldn't have made a very good shaker either. But Gary's poetry, in many respects, is another way of him expressing the shaker's best known hymn about how we should come down where we ought to be. So I'm going to ask you to help me close this little reflection by singing that together. It is number 16. Let's sing it through twice as we close this reflection on Gary Snyder.